The next case today is Stephen Webster versus Dean Gray, appeal number 22-1002. Attorney Curran, please introduce yourself on the record and proceed with your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court, Dana Curran for Stephen Webster. I will not be saving any rebuttal time. My argument has been the same in the SJC of Massachusetts and the district court below, which is that the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth fails to support the conviction. It was the Commonwealth's theory at trial that there were four people who engaged in this home invasion and murder, and that...
Just to be clear, doesn't, yes, on habeas it have to be not quite that argument, but that no reasonable person could think?
It does, but if the conviction rests on on evidence that is legally insufficient, that meets the standard. There are cases from this court that say that, and that is my contention. The Commonwealth had a particular theory, which is when the shooting started, three gentlemen who were caught jumped out the window, jumped over the fences, and that fourth person, in the Commonwealth theory, is that it was Webster, got into a rental car that was parked behind the house and drove up out the driveway and drove off. The problem with that is by the time the car would have driven off, there were about 10 police officers there. They had set up a perimeter around the house. There were neighbors watching, and nobody saw or heard any car drive off.
But the car apparently did drive off, because tire tracks were found near the house, and the car was recovered in Boston.
Well, I mean,
the car didn't fly there.
I don't contest that the car may have been there. I think a lot of the evidence pointed to by the Commonwealth, every piece of evidence actually there's less than meets the eye.
Well, that you say that in your brief, Mr. Curran, and that's probably right, but this is a classic case where each individual piece of evidence may be insufficient to make the Commonwealth's case, but when you add it all together, a picture emerges. That's what the SJC said. That's what Judge Saylor said, Chief Judge Saylor said in his rescript on habeas, and the individual points that in accumulation paint that picture, I think are fairly convincing, and the car is one of them.
I would disagree with that, and again, the tire marks may show that the car was there at some point, not necessarily at the time of the shooting. The tire marks essentially are the same, didn't necessarily match the car. They were consistent with the tires on the car.
You keep using the word necessarily.
Right.
Does that fit, given the procedural context and the standard review? Don't we have to assume that there is sufficient evidence that the car was there and then that the car wasn't there, it was in Boston?
Well, I mean, the fact that the car was in Boston, the car ended up in Boston. The car was there. And I will concede that there's evidence that the evidence would support that Webster was in the area at the time,
and that Webster was in the car because his DNA was in it.
His DNA was found on the on the passenger door, in the rear seat passenger door, both inside and outside.
And am I right that there's evidence of him being in touch with everyone, and then it goes silent during the period in which the crime is committed?
I think that's right, that he was in touch with a couple of people prior to, but again, that I think when we're looking at all of these other aspects, all of this evidence, we're not looking at the theory that the car drove off at the time of the shooting, that he was present at the time of the shooting. We're now saying, well, okay, even if he didn't do that,
I think the thought is that his presence there increases the probability that if the car drove off, he was in it when it did. Whereas if there was evidence that he wasn't there, that would decrease the probability that if the car drove off, he was in it when it did.
Well, I mean, I think you have to establish, number one, his presence or at least his participation in the crime, and number two, that he had the state of mind and the knowledge that this was not going to be a drug deal, this was going to be a murder. And that is, that is where I think the Commonwealth falls short. And again, when you look at all of
I'm clear, though, on your theory, are you suggesting that even if the evidence supported the idea he was present during the commission of the crime, he still would be insufficient to prove his guilt?
If he was at the house, at the time of the murder, then I think, I don't have an argument.
Okay.
I think my argument
I see that he wasn't at the house.
He wasn't at the house. So, for example, correctly points out the fact, and the SJC correctly points out that the tower where the murder took place, the cell phone tower, that his phone had pinged off of that tower. The problem is that the tower has three sectors, each 120 degrees. His phone did not ping off the section where the house was. Where his phone pinged is that sector includes things like, for example, the Cape Cod Mall and half of Hyannis.
Isn't that why the fact that the communication goes dark during the period in which the crime occurred, potentially probative that he was nearby and then he was there? I thought that was the whole theory.
Well, I think the theory that he was there and that he drove off is just so highly implausible that I don't think you can, even in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, I don't think that helps them.
Can I ask you one thing about Chief Judge Saylor's opinion? I think I'm reading it correctly, but it seemed to be running two different theories. One theory in which his guilt could be predicated on sufficient evidence that he was at the house during the commission of the crime, and an alternative theory that he could be found to have sufficient evidence of his guilt even if he wasn't present during the commission of the crime. Did you read it the same way I did?
This the SJC decision?
No, this is Chief Judge Saylor's opinion.
I think so. And
on that second theory, the SJC only had one theory, as I read it, which was that he was present during the commission of the crime. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's a little vague, but I think that's probably correct. I had trouble making heads or tails of the SJC opinion in some ways. And, when you look at... If four people went down to the Cape and three of them got caught and one of them drove back, the problem you have is that the Webster phone, the phone attributed to Webster, and the phone attributed to one of the David, I always drop last names, but that was, while he was driving, those two phones were making calls and we're sending texts, some simultaneously and overlapping. So I think there's and then the car drove up to Lowell, we don't know why it did, and then it came back, and it was 1.6 miles from where Webster lives. I do have to say that in between those two locations, there are probably, maybe there are 150, 200,000 people that live, and including, an area where I have halfway between, where I have a number of clients on drug and murder cases, a very high drug trafficking area. To say that it at 1.6 miles away establishes that it was Webster. Halfway between.
But Mr. Curran, again, no one's saying that the fact that it's 1.6 miles away establishes that it's Webster. But it is in accumulation with all the other facts, none of those other 200,000 people have sent texts to members of this home invasion crew discussing firearms, which Webster did in this timeframe, and both the SJC and Chief Judge Saylor have said that the evidence supports an inference that Webster supplied the firearms for what happened.
I strongly disagree with the fact that those texts established firearms.
Well, I thought you might disagree, but that's the finding we're faced with.
I mean, I had a case a few years ago where my client used to get calls saying, I want two Neshoba. And then...
You can finish.
Point that the agents made was that Neshoba Valley ski area is famous for white powder, and white powder could be considered cocaine. I thought that was a perfectly reasonable inference. I had another case where somebody said on a wiretap, I have to go, I have to clean the snow off the cars. And a DEA agent made the same point. But the problem is that he had a used car lot and it had snowed the night before. I think what you have in these texts is more like the snow in the cars.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, Attorney Badway, please introduce yourself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Assistant Attorney General Eva Badway for the respondent. This court should affirm the district court's denial of habeas relief. Massachusetts SJC reasonably determined that the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth was sufficient to permit a rational jury to find beyond a reasonable doubt that the petitioner was guilty as a joint venturer of an armed robbery in which the victim was killed. The evidence shows, as the SJC reasonably determined, and you are correct, Your Honor, we're here on habeas review, and the standard of review is whether the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court's decision is an unreasonable application or contrary to Supreme Court law. This court has said the Lattimore standard, which the Commonwealth SJC used, is the functional equivalent of the federal standard. And because of that, this cannot be contrary to Supreme Court law. So now the inquiry is whether or not the SJC's decision was an unreasonable application of Jackson. And the SJC said that the evidence shows that the petitioner helped plan the crimes against the victim, that he was at the scene of the crime, that he participated in the crime, and that he fled from the crime scene. And we can take it one step at a time, according to the SJC decision, to show why this was a reasonable analysis of the evidence presented to the jury. First, as to the planning of the crime, the record reveals that the petitioner sent text messages where he talked about getting a gun and meeting Mac and Evans. Both the number of the calls and the communications between the three men suggest that the petitioner's involvement in a criminal plan in which the petitioner supplied the firearm. Second, the evidence that the petitioner was at the scene of the crime. Cell site location information put the petitioner in the area of the victim's home on July 11th, where the relevant time of the robbery and murder. His DNA was located on a mask found in a backpack that was holding the murder weapon, and it was the same backpack that held other tools that were used in the crime. All of the co-venturers stopped interacting by cell phone immediately before and immediately after the crime, creating an inference that we're all together. And third, the evidence that the petitioner fled the scene of the crime. A witness observed a fourth man evade capture at the scene. Cell site location information showed the petitioner's phone progressing from Barnstable to Boston during the time after the matter. The petitioner's DNA was discovered inside a vehicle that Evans, one of the co-venturers, had rented, and the vehicle had tire treads consistent with certain markings that were left on the ground at the scene of the crime.
Ms. Badway,
yes.
Mr. Curhan says that because of the number of police at the scene and other considerations, that it's completely implausible to think that Webster drove off in the car after the incident had occurred. What's your response to that?
We're here on habeas review, Your Honor, and Mr. Curran has to show that it was an unreasonable determination of the facts. And the jury is in the best position to determine the facts, and the further away you get from the jury, I would say it was up for the jury to decide what weight to put.
Well,
what the jury decided on that particular fact.
What are the facts you'd point to that would make it rational to conclude that he drove off?
The petitioner's DNA was located inside the vehicle that Evans had rented.
But not on the driver's side.
That is correct, Your Honor. But again, we have to only use the inferences. We're here on habeas review. It has to be an unreasonable determination of the facts.
Well, what about the point that there was a perimeter set up and many eyes on the potential escape route, and yet no one sees the car leave? What's the explanation for that? Is there an explanation for that?
I don't have an explanation for that, Your Honor. But I
were there gaps in the perimeter? I mean, what was the nature? Was the road? I guess I'm just trying to think like that. What the scene looks like.
So there's a house, and three people are jumping out the window and jumping the fence, and there's a parking lot. There are tire marks at the scene.
But when they say they established the perimeter, is it?
That's the back of the house where the tire marks are. What I'm saying is, Your Honor, I have no explanation about how this inference that Mr. Curran is saying, but with all of the other evidence, and with the person seeing...
The theory of the SJC is that he escapes in the car, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so there's got to be some plausible basis for thinking he could escape in the car.
Well, there's a witness who sees the fourth person run in the opposite direction as the three people who are jumping the fence actually get caught. Okay? So they know that there is a fourth person there.
Right, but the question is, did that fourth person leave in the car?
Right.
So what's the account that makes it plausible to think that car left with the fourth person?
The account that makes it plausible that the car left with the fourth person is the CSLI evidence that has the two cell phones in it.
What do we know about when the perimeter was established and how it looked when it was established?
Your Honor, I know that someone from the car dealership called the police when they heard shots fired. Police immediately came to the scene of the crime and they saw Kiko Thomas, one of the co-renters, in the window.
Mm-hmm.
Three people jumped out the window and jumped the fence, okay? Mac, one of the co-venturers, was found hiding. And when they found him hiding, they found $14,300, they found marijuana, and they found in the parking lot.
None of that tells me when and how this perimeter was established. Maybe there's no evidence of it, but I'm just curious.
Your Honor, I have no explanation of when and how
Do we know? Is there anything in the record? Does the record say the perimeter was established within 10 minutes after the police got the first call, within half an hour after?
Your Honor, right now I have, I'm not recalling anything directly about how the perimeter was established. If I can, I will send a letter.
Okay, does the record at least show this, that at the time that fourth person is seen running? Do we know from the record whether at that point the police had already responded?
I believe that they had already responded, but it wasn't a police officer who testified about the fourth person. It was a different witness, Carrera.
I understand. I'm just trying to get the time. The theory must be somehow this fourth person is the petitioner.
Correct.
And somehow that petitioner gets into the car and drives away. That's your theory.
That is the SJC's theory.
Right, which you're defending.
Yes.
Yeah, so the theory that you're defending is that it is plausible to think the fourth person who was seen was Webster. He's seen running away to the back of the house. He somehow gets in the car and drives away.
That is correct.
Okay.
He has the cell phones with him.
And what is the theory about the route through which that car got off the property? Does the state have a theory as to how that happened?
No, Your Honor, not that I know of, except from the cell site location information that was being...
No, but I just mean like there's got to be a road it travels on, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so the cell site location information tracks the...
the road that it was on.
And
to get to that road, do you have to follow the driveway out of the property that we're talking about here?
Your Honor, I don't know how they did it because it was in the back of the house. So So when the three other co-venturers, they're running forward and they're pursued. So Eddie Mack is caught, Evans is caught, and...
Yeah, but I'm just asking about what the state's theory about how the car left the property to get to the road that you track it on. Do you have a theory?
Your Honor, I don't have a theory. I will check the record and I will happily write a letter explaining what the theory was.
Because just so you see, my understanding of what petitioner's argument is,
right,
is there's no plausible way that car can get to that road with Webster in it.
I don't think that is exactly...
Okay, so...
Yeah. So what we're talking about here on habeas review when it comes to a reasonable determination of the facts, and the evidence that was presented at trial showed that three of the co-defendants were immediately apprehended, and this co-defendant was not. But as to exactly how his car left the scene of the crime, I will present the court with a letter from the respondent if there is anything in the record to indicate the exact route. But I think it's the cell site location information from the phone that tracks and puts this petitioner in the vehicle that's leaving the scene of the crime. It's the same vehicle that Evans rented that was supposed to be returned to the rental agency and was not returned to the rental agency. That same vehicle was found 1 mile from
the
petitioner's home.
Okay, thank you. Judge Carter, did you have a question? Okay. Thank you.
That concludes argument in this case.